David, I think there's two questions that people are really asking right now is, number one, can crypto get Kamala Harris to pivot? Can crypto advocacy be bipartisan? And number two, if she hasn't pivoted yet, is it too late? I mean, we are less than 90 days from the next election. Bankless Nation, it's the third week of August. It is time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. David, what do we have?
The Kamala pivot to crypto, or lack thereof, could it happen? Or is it too late? It might be a little bit more important these days as Kamala has hit 10% likelihood of winning above Donald Trump, 55% to 45%. So the Kamala pivot becoming more important than ever. Are we getting any closer to it? We're gonna talk about that.
Also, sometime soon, could you be using Tap to Pay? Using stablecoins, maybe USDC on your iPhone? Jeremy Allaire says yes. We'll talk about that. There's some drama going on too in the tokenized Bitcoin space. So BitGo has this wrapped Bitcoin product. It's called Wrapped Bitcoin, Wrapped BTC. And it's going through some growing phases, some transformation here. Actually, David, you got to update me on this, but maybe it has opened the door for Coinbase. They are looking at rolling out a tokenized Bitcoin product. We'll talk about that.
Optimism Superchain is about to be real and not just a meme. Eric Trump's digital real estate project and crypto's growing list of political prisoners. The splattering of topics that we're going to get through all of this and more. But first, I want to talk about where I am, because I am back in Argentina.
Yes, you are.
There is a pop-up city here in Buenos Aires called Aleph, part of the Crecimiento movement, which is Crecimiento is the Spanish word for growth, focusing on sponsoring, supporting, growing the crypto movement here in Buenos Aires. So it's like this meeting point of crypto startups, Argentine crypto startups with Argentine crypto founders, regulators, government officials, many part of Milei's administration, perhaps Milei himself, and then a bunch of just like, you know, capitalists, venture capitalists trying to support the crypto movement.
Who's putting that on? Like, who's organizing it?
It's a large part of just like a grassroots bottom-up effort by the local Argentine community, and then a lot of support from the Protocol Labs team, the Filecoin people. So like Juan Benet is leading this, just a few other like shakers and movers who are just like relentless at making things happen. And it was just like, so there's this co-working spot with a bunch of Argentine startups where like if you were an Argentine startup, you would apply to join Aleph and become part of the community, get like some of the support, the network. It's kind of like an accelerator as well.
This is you. And just this talk, is you at the co-working place.
Yeah, I'm just there like being an imposter. Like I'm not in a startup. I'm just hanging out at the co-working spot and just like talking to the Argentine founders and the problems that they're working on and the things that they are focusing on. It's such a breath of fresh air from what I'm like kind of previously surrounded by, which is like, you know, North American, United States, European crypto Twitter. Talking about like, you know, the 17th like restakes roll up alt VM that is like getting deployed, or like the bajillionth meme coin. These like Argentine crypto founders, like it's not like speculative fun and games for them. They have like Argentina has a very urgent and pressing need to like build real products in crypto. And you know what I've learned while like spending here? There's like three Argentine crypto projects that I'm going to talk to on a podcast. I'm going to bring them all on a podcast that each have millions of users, like millions of local Argentine users.
That's awesome.
And like, we don't talk about them crypto Twitter.
You're saying crypto users. They're actually using crypto to like do things, like do real world, quote unquote, things.
They are like normal, well-adjusted adults who like go to a 9-to-5 job, and they are also users of like LemonPay, Belo, Bienbit, like some sort of like crypto startup in Argentina. I wouldn't even call it a startup now. It's like a legitimate business, and they're just using crypto to like facilitate their daily lives.
On behalf of Bankless listeners, I am a Bankless listener. I would love an episode on that. I would also love an episode if you can get them. With Malay.
Javier Malay.
Do you think that could happen on Bankless?
Okay. I think there is like somewhere around a 10 to 15% chance that I can get Javier Malay here on the episode, on the show.
Should we fire up a Polymarket then? Make our own odds here?
I would actually just rather people spend their effort like trying to help me on this because like I'm like kind of close. And it's because like Javier's Malay's administration has a lot of crypto presence.
Yeah.
And so there is just literally some like logistics things. He's not in Argentina at this moment. He is in like, I think, Korea for some reason. But he'll be back. And when he comes to Argentina, like, there's people who are in his administration who are also here at Aleph, who are like knocking on Malay's doors, like, hey, by the way, like, there's like crypto things happening and you should pay attention. So yeah. We're like not far away from, like, there's also just a big regulatory day on the 22nd or 23rd of August that I'm pretty stoked for. That's like kind of the big day where, like, can we get Javier Milei here in like this crypto like startup incubator thing?
My impression, this is a super vanilla, I know nothing impression, but that is he has expressed crypto openness to crypto sentiment and even positive crypto sentiment, but has not yet had the time, or like for whatever reason, it hasn't been on the top priority list to here's what I'm doing in crypto and here's the policy. Is that about right?
That's right. His pro-crypto policies are more about like removing restrictive regulation than instigating like positive crypto regulation. And that's one of the big goals here of Aleph, is to get like startups the assurances, like long 20-year long assurances that their crypto business is going to be like sound and stable and not like rugged away from like future administrations. He's a big libertarian, so like crypto ideals are like part of him, but you're right, he just hasn't had like the time or energy to be able to like really narrow down on crypto.
Step one, Democrats, take note. The first step is to fire all your Gary Genslers. Okay, that comes first. So hopefully
he did do that.
David, before we get in, we got a message from our friends over at Puffer. They got something cool going on. What is it?
Yeah, they are introducing Puffer Unify, which is a base rollup that addresses Ethereum's fragmentation issues and benefits user experience with 100-second pre-confirmation. So that's 100-second perceived transaction times, along with synchronous composability and unified liquidity with the Ethereum layer one. Unify comes from being unified with the Ethereum layer one. They want you as a builder to fill out a form that is in the show notes, or if you're just a user, you can also go check it out. There is also a link in the show notes for you as well.
Let's talk about the numbers for the week. Bitcoin, where are we at, up or down?
We are flat. Bitcoin started the week 59,400, ending the week 59,600, up like 0.3% on the week. ETH up 6% on the week. ETH,
what?
Not sucking eggs this week. Yeah, like started the week at $2,590, currently at $2,670. Nice job, ETH. You didn't blow it this week. Well done.
We just need another, I guess, 10 weeks of that, and then we'll be back to something that feels more normal.
We got one.
Well, shall we check in on our ETF inflows? This is Bitcoin right now. Just, I guess, by way of recap, this is all a Dune Analytics born that we're looking at. There is now 4.7% of all Bitcoin supply contained in these things called Bitcoin ETFs, and that is since January. All of that has happened. So it's been a supply sink for 4.7% of Bitcoin supply. Right now, for Ethereum, if you're keeping track, you're looking at the two horses in the ETF race. Ethereum ETFs have 2.3% of ETH supply. What do you make of that? We got some catch up there too.
Definitely. The ETH outflows is currently in like its deepest trough. We are starting to climb out of the hole that the Grayscale ETH has put us in. Like the very expected hole, but like still like kind of big nonetheless. There are like a total net outflows of something like $360 million of ETH out of the Grayscale ETFs, out of all of the ETFs. There's been plenty of inflows into like BlackRock, Fidelity, Bitwise, but we're still in the hole. But the Grayscale ETH flows have stopped. They've been like basically flat or just overwhelmed by inflows to other ETFs for the last like 3 days. We've had 3 days of positive flows. I would like 30 more, please.
Yeah, we could do another 10 weeks of that too. Just positive flows. That's all we want. I mean, we're chipping away at that number. You're right. It's 366 net outflows. So we're still in the negative territory on that income statement, but chipping away at it week by week. I mean, a couple weeks ago, David, this was closer to 400 million. And now we're at 366. Yeah. So that's that's progress, right?
I guess that's progress.
Anthony Sassano calling out there was actually one day last week that the Ether E, the Grayscale, had no outflows. So we're like, maybe that's starting to slow down.
That's something.
Which would be healthy.
That's something.
Global crypto market cap. Where are we?
Total crypto market cap, 2.2 trillion, right on the dot. Slight incline from last week as we are pulling out of a hole that the yen trade unwind put us in. Lots of holes that we're climbing out of.
Yeah. Digging our way into holes and then trying to climb back out of them, I guess. Let's talk about a hole that Jerome Powell has found himself in. That's this inflation hole. He's been, working his way out. He's been trying to dig out. That's why all the rate hikes were happening over the last couple of years. So we're above 5%. We're at 5.25 to 5.5%. Some good news if you are a central banker named Jerome Powell. Annual inflation
if you're listening.
Has gone to three-year lows. So that's good news.
Wow, three-year lows?
Three-year lows. It rose just, we got the numbers in, it rose just 0.2% from June to July. So that means year-over-year prices are 2.9%, and that's down from 3%. So
the year-over-year prices starts with a 2.
Yeah.
The target is 2. We are at 2.9. We're in the twos.
Exactly. So all of this may mean Jerome Powell gets to go make a victory lap. And the way that affects markets is Jerome Powell can say, hey, I did the thing I said I would do, which is break the back of inflation through these rate hikes. And now we're done that. That phase is over. That movie has concluded. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to go be a hero in this other area, and I'm going to go hit the unemployment numbers because those spiked up a little bit. Remember the numbers in August that caused some of the early August sell-off were due to recession fears and unemployment fears. And so in September, likely this all tees up him putting in another rate cut. Whether it's a 0.5% rate cut or something lower, we don't know yet, but I think that the market is basically saying that's what it's expecting, is Powell to cut rates in September.
My question, I think everyone, the right questions to ask are, is the Fed going to try and like front run the timing on this like they did not do during COVID, where they hiked rates way too late and they had to do it really fast because they were so late? Now, are they going to try and like be a little bit more, have a little bit more foresight and lower the rates ahead of any like, you know, overshooting of having too high rates for too long? I think it would, like, that's a big question. And also, I'm guessing that they're not just going to like, they're not going to send these rates to zero like overnight. Like, they are slowly, incrementally going to lower these rates over a very long period of time. I think they learned their lesson from the whiplash of like going up 5.5% inside of a year. They're not going to go down 5.5% in a year. I bet you like we have like positive interest rates. We're not going to zero. Maybe we go to zero, but if we do, it's going to take years to get there.
Yeah, and I think Kamala Harris, if you're Kamala Harris, you'd certainly appreciate a Jerome Powell rate cut in September, maybe a big juicy one going into the November election season. Dave, there's another thing we've been looking at.
Hole that we've been in. This is a more recent hole.
This is crypto's not going up as much as stocks, man. You know, the S&P, the NASDAQ hitting all-time highs. In crypto, we're just kind of lagging behind. Mm-hmm. What's the take here?
Yeah, this is Kelly Greer from Galaxy, who put out a tweet analysis that I thoroughly enjoyed. And she's just calling out the four recent horsemen of just dumpage into the Bitcoin markets and therefore the rest of crypto. Germany, Mt. Gox, Genesis, and the United States government. All four G's. Wow. Germany sold almost 50,000 Bitcoins between June 19th and July 30th. So like almost a straight month of dumpage. The Genesis bankruptcy put $33,000 of Bitcoin into the market. Mt. Gox distributed 110,000 Bitcoins in July into the market. And then the U.S. government has ongoing transfers into Coinbase. We can only assume that that's actually currently hitting the market. 4K was transferred on June 26th. 10K Bitcoins were transferred on August 16th. And so like we're just like having some like idiosyncratic large G named Bitcoin dumpers that all happened all at once. And so like while stocks had the big pullback of the Japanese carry trade, that's already over, like climbing out of that hole. Like they're almost done because, you know, it's stock season. But like crypto has this like idiosyncratic sell pressure that like hopefully people just like also bet on there being a reversion to the mean and we actually are due for a pump.
Yeah.
That's an analysis.
That's a good quality analysis. I wouldn't dismiss this as cope because like most of these things are all just like one-time events, aren't they? And so you're right. They are idiosyncratic. Like they should, we won't get Germany selling more Bitcoin like later because they're all out. They sold it all. It's all gone.
Right.
David, there's another story in crypto, I think, which is meme coins. They've been a darling of the cycle. In fact, some have pointed to like they are the breakout crypto use case, which kind of makes me sad.
Yikes.
But what's
let's not call it a use case. Let's call it the most breakout crypto, like casino, sure. New casino game on the floor.
Casino use case. So give me some meme coin metrics. How do these puppies perform?
Yeah, so this is Adam who put out some numbers here. And just in the 24 hours that he put out this tweet, Adam Tech on Twitter, 16,357 tokens were launched in 24 hours. Is insane. That's crazy. Yeah. 175 of these graduated, made it to Radium, which is a different Solana DEX. When a meme coin on Solana gets sufficient liquidity, when they hit a market cap, this is all built into Pump.Fun. When they hit and it hits a market cap of $69,000, then some of that liquidity gets put onto Radium, which is like a more generalized Solana DEX. They call it graduating. Of the 175 that make it to Radium, 19 of those remain above the 69,000 market cap threshold to like stay there. And so from the 16,357 tokens that were launched,
so a $70,000 market cap. I mean,
right.
This is penny tokens here. This is really small territory.
Oh, for sure. Well, that tells you how many meme coins are like on the absolute floor, just like never go anywhere.
Okay.
If you were curious, of the 24 hours in which Adam was taking these numbers, the 16,357 tokens that were launched, 0.12% of them remain above the $69,000 market cap that allows it to be on Radium.
He calls it the Pump.Fun slaughterhouse. It's because it's so easy on Pump.Fun to launch one of these things. Like, you just, what do you need? What are the basics? You have an idea and you just like kind of have a crypto wallet. That's basically all you need. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. So no wonder people are doing it.
And so below, if that's another pretty similar analysis from Rudy, who talks about like these five stages of a meme coin. One is getting launched on Pump.Fun. One is the bonds, the liquidity goes over to Radium. Another is makes it onto CoinGecko and therefore is like relevant. The next one is maintains a $1 million market cap for multiple weeks. And then the next one is maintains a $10 million market cap for multiple weeks. $10 million is still very low. But if you are like the launcher or like the first through 10th buyer of a meme coin, making it to $10 million means you might have like up to $1 million. So to even just get on to CoinGecko, of the 1.7 million tokens that are on the metrics that Rudy put together, only 0.0008%, which is 141 of them, make it onto CoinGecko. Only 15 of them maintain a $10 million market cap. I think if you're in the meme coin trenches, like you actually sell far before you get to like the $1 million market cap. You know the euthanasia roller coaster?
Oh, yeah.
Like it used to be like, okay, like I only buy meme coins sub $100 million. And then it moved to like, okay, I only buy meme coins sub $10 million. I only buy meme coins sub $1 million. And now when we have how many 16,000 meme coins being minted in 24 hours, people are like, okay, I just bought a meme coin that made it to like the $20,000 market cap level. I'm going back and finding another one.
Yeah.
And so like meme coins can't like penetrate like this like very low market cap threshold because there's just so many goddamn many of them.
Yeah. It's a lot of ticket odds here. So do you have an explanation for all of this?
So I put out a tweet asking that same question. Like why is this the meta? If these odds are so terrible, how did meme coins become the meta? And the responses were overwhelmingly about like influencers who have large accounts who set the meta and the narrative pump the coins. And they're actually the ones that just like have the just like structural advantage here. They are the ones making all the wins.
Right.
Yeah. And then Eric Connor says like everyone else who is stuck thinking that they are next are in fact the ones that are just next in the meat grinder. There's like this was the most common answer to this. I actually thought Kobe's answer to this was also pretty interesting, which is like, okay, he understands metas. He's wrote this great blog post about metas. The answer as to why this is the meta is because any other meta has like 0% odds of like gaining traction. Because we have, his answer is like, there is no other meta. Like, we're not doing DeFi yield farming. We're not doing NFT mints. We're not doing whatever. There are no other metas. So this is the meta that we're stuck with.
So as bad as these odds are, it's still better than all of the other narrative investment odds that are out there.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying.
That's what he's saying.
Okay. So it's the best of the worst. I guess if you're a narrative meta trader, it's the best of the worst.
I mean, like the degens of crypto are always playing some game. And I think Kobe is saying this is the only game in town.
I would like to play some new games in crypto, but you know, meme coins aren't going anywhere. I just want other things. So
want a different game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We got more to talk about. The politics game. That's another type of game. So we've got Kamala. She's now taking the lead. And the question
very
is,
firm lead.
Is she going to pivot to crypto? Do we have a shred of evidence that she might be considering it?
Is there a chance?
And also, there's this group called Crypto for Harris that are trying to advocate for that. How's that going? We'll check in on that. All this and more. But before we get there, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including our recommended exchange for 2024. That's Kraken. Go create an account.
If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss.
The Obol Collective is up and running and is maybe one of the most important collectives that you've never heard of. Obol is bringing distributed validators, or DVs, to the Ethereum staking stack. Distributed validators allow multiple parties of people running multiple nodes to create a single virtual Ethereum validator together. This makes participating in Ethereum consensus more accessible, more affordable, and more inclusive. It is a strict improvement to the Ethereum staking tech stack. With collaboration from Lido, EtherFi, Eigenlayer, and 50 other entities, and thousands of individuals, the Obol Collective is working to scale and decentralize Ethereum using DVs. And now you can get involved. Introducing the Obol Contributions Program. Visit obol.org/bankless to stake on DVs, either through a partner staking protocol or at home. Earn access to future governance and ownership in Obol while contributing to retroactive funding for projects that are actively decentralizing Ethereum. This is your opportunity to secure inclusion in one of the most important projects working to scale Ethereum's foundation for future growth. Visit obol.org/bankless to get started. That's obol.org/bankless.
The Uniswap extension is here.
The self-custody wallet, created by the most trusted team in DeFi, Uniswap Labs, designed to make swapping feel effortless. This extension lives in your browser's sidebar, letting you swap, sign transactions, and send or receive crypto without ever losing your place on the internet. Plus, with human-readable transaction messages, you'll always know exactly what you're signing.
Navigate a multi-chain world effortlessly with support for 11 chains like Ethereum Mainnet, Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism.
No more chain switching or token importing. All your assets are right where you need them to be. The Uniswap extension is designed to level up your swapping experience with other Uniswap Labs products as well. Easily onboard to the extension using the Uniswap mobile wallet to begin managing your assets across platforms and take advantage of smooth, seamless synergies with the Uniswap web app.
So go and download the Uniswap extension today by clicking the link in the show notes.
Just another way Uniswap is helping you swap smarter.
David, I think there's two questions that people are really asking right now is, number one, can crypto get Kamala Harris to pivot? Can crypto advocacy be bipartisan? And number two, if she hasn't pivoted yet, is it too late? I mean, we are less than 90 days from the next election. So I think we'll attempt to answer those questions, or at least present some evidence to let listeners decide on what's going on themselves. But before we get there, I think we need to check in on how the election is going. So what are we looking at here?
Yeah, the odds of Kamala, according to Polymarket, the odds of Kamala beating Donald Trump are up to 10%. This screenshot shows 9%, and this screenshot's 24 hours old. We're actually at 10%, where Kamala's at 55% and Donald Trump's at 45%. This is a very firm lead, I would say. I know these are odds, and so this technically isn't like meaningfully different from a coin flip, but I've always been used to just like, if somebody is predicted to win the election by 55%, like I kind of consider that a very far lead.
Yeah, I mean, we had Nate Silver on the podcast, who's kind of the guru around elections, and he has indicated that Kamala does have a lead, but he still sort of, with his margin of error, considers it somewhat of a coin flip. I mean, that's his take. Mm-hmm. But I think the noticeable thing is these numbers have reversed on Polymarket prediction markets. David, it was not like a month ago. It's just like shortly right. after the assassination attempt. And Trump was at 65. Now it was
Hit 73. He hit 73 right after the assassination attempt.
Like, absolutely incredible. And that was probably a temporary spike. I mean, really hard to sustain those types of odds.
Yeah.
But I think the big story here is how much this has changed. So it seems like the momentum has really shifted here.
And it's the trend as well. Like, Kamala has been in a straight line up ever since she took the candidacy. And Donald Trump has been in a straight line down ever since his, like, assassination attempt. So, like, while we're at 10%, like, it's a 10% and trending even greater to Kamala. I've been listening to some political podcasts just because that's the season that we're in. One, Pirate Wires, the much more right-leaning pro-Donald Trump
podcast. Was that with Mike Solana?
Mike Solana, yeah.
Okay, Does he host that?
And then also, he hosts that. Yeah, he's on that. Cool. And then the other one I listen to is Pod Save America, which is, like, very lib. So it's, like, a tale of two podcasts. Like, you're getting both perspectives. And, like, the Mike Solana one, I hate it when people use this word applied to me, so I apologize to Mike for using it on him. But just, like, the words that were in my head was just, like, this is cope. Like, it's just, like, he was running through, like, all the reasons as to, like, why this, like, how this is so crazy that Kamala is the Democratic candidate. And to me, I was, like, yeah, like, this is like, high Kamala percentage cope going on. And then I go over to, like, the Pod Save America one, which is, like, very pro-Kamala, anti-Trump, and they are just taking victory laps.
Yeah.
And so, like, sentiment, this is the sentiment, like, across the political spectrum right now.
Yeah, and you and I are ETH holders, okay? We know what cope feels like and what it sounds like.
I know what cope feels like.
That looks like cope to me. It's funny, on the other hand, it was a few weeks ago, and it seemed like the Democrats, on kind of like the Democrat side, there was immense amount of cope. They could not handle that, you know, Trump was taking the lead. And so, look, momentum shifts can happen. I'm sure this could happen and forth a few more times, but it leads to a question that is still unanswered. There's this opportunity that people have seen. Obviously, Biden White House, he let the anti-crypto army kind of, like, run roughshod over his administration, administrative policy. But Kamala's trying to get elected. Is this a chance for her to reset? Is this a chance for the Democrats, the White House, Kamala Harris to pivot on crypto? That was the question. So we've got a few data points on that. The first was this. This is in the block. This happened last Thursday, so August 8th. Crypto executives meet White House officials to discuss policy grievances during virtual roundtable. So they got on Zoom. What was this meeting? Who were the participants? Set the landscape for us.
Kind of a who's who amongst, like, this topic. From the White House side, U.S. Deputy Secretary of the Treasury Wally Adeyemo, a very important character, National Economic Council Director Lael Brainard, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Bruce Reed, Directory of Legislative Affairs for Vice President Kamala Harris Christine Lucius, and then others. And then from the crypto side, some names that y'all are definitely going to recognize: Hayden Adams from Uniswap, David Ripley from Kraken, Jeremy Allaire from Circle, Chris Dixon from A16Z, Paul Graywall from Coinbase. Wow, these are all people that we've had on the podcast. Brad Carlinghouse and Chris Larson from Ripple. Haven't had them. Mark Cuban, and then also Anthony Scaramucci. So, like, a pretty good lineup of, like, force movers, both in Capitol Hill and in crypto. How did the meeting go? How did it go? This went well, right?
Let's talk about the
I'm assuming
the bad
this
side.
Went totally fine.
Well, this is a article title from Fox News. So it says, crypto executives clash with Democrat leaders in heated Zoom meeting. Heated Zoom meeting, crypto executives clash. Again, so this is Fox News saying this, but their quote is, executives didn't hold back on telling the administration reps how much damage they've done to the crypto industry and to the Democratic Party with their actions against digital assets. Apparently, at one point, a White House official said that, hey, the banks and regulators, they're not really coming after the crypto industry. Like, this is kind of fake news. It's not what's happening. And in response, an executive, so one of those names probably that you mentioned, a crypto executive, asked for a show of hands. Who among the crypto crowd here has ever been denied banking services because of White House policy? And nearly all of the industry representatives, all of the crypto people, raised their hands. Okay?
So yikes. That's a big rut-row.
Can you imagine this? So this is Nick Carter, of course, weighing in.
For the record, if we had been on that call, our hands would have also been raised.
Bank of
America.
We
have also been debanked. Thanks, Bank of America.
We're at a little credit union who just like, you know, I guess we've squeaked by their
I love our Virginia credit union, dude. They're cute.
You've never been there. You don't know Alan, the bank teller.
I've never been to Virginia.
Face to face with Alan. I've gone and he's like, bankless? What? Oh, bankless?
Sup?
Anyway, so that's the bad side of it, which feels kind of bad. The good side of it, I suppose, this is a quote from The Block saying that this was actually notable. This is a source in The Block. The big difference compared to a previous meeting was who was attended. You had people like Wally, you had Lyle, who are the most senior level representatives overseeing crypto policy in the Biden administration in terms of non-regulators. So this is very much seen as moving the ball forward, given those who attended. I'll note, Kamala Harris did not attend, but
the
you had
important
some senior,
person was not there.
Yes. Ro Khanna hosted the meeting, who's a notable Democrat who is in support of crypto, and he's been running quarterback to try to rally the troops amongst the Democrats to support crypto policy. We're actually having him on the podcast. And
very
he said
excited for that podcast.
It was a spirited conversation, positive dialogue. There's much frustration in the industry, so at least he acknowledged that. And he says, I'm hopeful that as a consequence of these meetings, the administration will issue a positive statement in the coming weeks. So he's trying within his own party to apply some pressure, maybe some mild pressure. I'm not sure. He's doing great work, I think. It's just like, is there any evidence? So what do the crypto people say in the aftermath of this?
Scaramucci, who's actually somehow adjacently close to crypto, says it's encouraging that these high-level officials took the time to show up and listen. My colleagues in the crypto space understandably want action now, but that's not how things work in Washington. I think we're making steady progress. Paul Graywall, the chief legal officer for Coinbase, says any conversation on moving beyond this administration's unproductive record on crypto is positive. It's not too late. But time is running short. The White House should publicly back the Senate's efforts to pass a bipartisan market structure bill, as the House has done, and sign it into law. And so mixed reactions from that. It's very concerning to me that like the leading like advisor to the Harris campaign, Adam Eno, is like denying the fact that they have been like operating choke point 2.0 on crypto. Like the fact that they don't think that that's real is like very concerning. It's a big bummer that Kamala Harris wasn't there. Like, you know, just show up, please. I know she's a busy lady, but just yep. like, come on.
Just a first meeting, though, David.
Yeah.
Just a first meeting.
The meetings like this in the political sphere, you need like six of them. And like the optimistic case is that each one becomes like bigger and more important. And this is the first one. That's the optimistic case.
I would echo Paul, though. Time is running out. So the good news is, yes. I suppose, they did have a second. So there is this Twitter account that sprung up. It's sort of an initiative. I'm not sure who's behind it, called Crypto for Harris. And they hosted another meeting. And this time the big guns came out. Senator Chuck Schumer was actually there. So how did that meeting go?
Better. Chuck Schumer, while on the meeting, says, we all believe in the future of crypto. Congress has a responsibility to provide common sense and sound regulation on crypto, and we need your support to make sure that any proposal is bipartisan. And so that was like Chuck Schumer, like beating the drum, like great, glad to have you on the team. Thanks, Chuck, for being there. Jake Bruckman, who was there, this is a crypto VC, definitely one of us, gave probably the most comprehensive like analysis of the meeting that I thought, and gave it like kind of a thumbs down of a review. So like in one way, kind of glad it happened. Thank you, Chuck. But overall, here's what kind of Jake said about it. I thought a town hall was for hearing people's opinions. Instead, we got a few lectures of the participants' views of crypto and where it should go politically. I didn't see anyone resembling crypto company founders. Investors and founders are the bread and butter of any industry. In short, it satisfied the Harris prong, but not the crypto prong in the Crypto for Harris name, as far as I see it. No one really mentioned the SEC policy, the Biden's veto, or the lack of clarity. It seems like we'll just move forward and happily make this a bipartisan issue, even though Harris-backed policies made it partisan in the first place. So I'm going to say that, summarize Jake's take as like a pretty firm thumbs down on the effort behind this particular meeting.
Yeah, and someone that wasn't there, as you mentioned, was Kamala Harris. Yeah, it's like missing action, not there. Not even her VP was there. So I think it's safe to conclude at this point, we have not seen a pivot from Kamala Harris. Like, there's no evidence of anything like that happening.
If you want some amount of hopium, because I've been listening to these political podcasts, the Harris administration is not giving out any policy indications about anything at all. They are like Hearst, the strategy right now for the Harris administration, the Harris campaign, is to just have Harris be generic Democrat.
Yeah.
Because the generic Democrat is actually working in her favor. And like, they're not giving Donald Trump's like campaign any sort of like surface area to latch onto. So like, she's kind of just like being very defensive and being generic Democrat. So like, no policy is coming out of the Harris camp. Now, maybe that's the reason as to like why she hasn't decided to make a move on crypto. Maybe that's hopium. That's probably hopium. But like, you know, I think that's a valid line of reasoning.
Yeah, I think at this point, like, silence is basically an admission that there's going to be no real change in the White House. At least that's how I'm interpreting it. But some people think it's not too late for the Democrats to win crypto votes, including that account we mentioned, this group that's trying to advocate for Harris called Crypto for Harris on Twitter that's organizing some of this. I think the thing we have to look at to see if there's any evidence of any change on crypto policy in a Kamala Harris White House, as opposed to the anti-crypto policy that Biden had, is who she surrounds herself with. So let's talk about that. Who is she surrounding herself with? Who's the administrative state that's kind of like helping her? I think the first place to look is her campaign. So let's talk about her VP, her vice president. So her nominee for vice president is Tim Walz. Is he pro-crypto is the question. Part of the answer is we don't know for sure, but I think most people are saying it's unlikely that he would be a friend of crypto. He hasn't spoken about crypto yet, but during his term of governor, he supported legislation to bolster regulation of cryptocurrency kiosks. That was one of the main crypto issues in Minnesota, and he came down on the anti-crypto policy side of it. You wanted to limit daily transactions to 2K. In general, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a core part of his campaign to be like for crypto or anti-crypto necessarily. It's just kind of like generic, but certainly doesn't look like pro-crypto. How about her campaign advisors?
Okay, so there's two people in her campaign advisors that are relevant here, and one is good, very good. One is very bad. Starting with a bad one, Brian Nelson, Treasury Department Under Secretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence during his previous tenure. This was the tenure that where the Treasury sanctioned Tornado Cash and other on-chain privacy tools, also brought an enforcement action against Binance. He was part of the Treasury organization, whether this was him or not, undetermined, but he was part of that organization. So that's the bad one. The good one, David Plouffe, a former advisor to Barack Obama and former member of the Binance Global Advisory Board.
Oh,
Binance. That's our Binance. And so Binance has an article saying that in September of 2022, Plouffe joined Binance's Global Advisory Board, chaired by former U.S. Senator and ambassador to China, Max Baucus. And so there is a very firm overlap between advisor to Binance and advisor to the Harris campaign, which like kind of. I think that's like the best indicator that we have. It's not like a large one, but like it's something.
Yeah, it's there's a little like there's something there. Some light peeking through the clouds.
It's something there.
Maybe, yeah. But now I'm going to quash that light out. You ready for this, David?
Oh, okay,
so
sure.
The bigger question is like also that's her campaign, but what would her administration look like? What would the Harris administration look like? The one thing that I feel like I've learned in just like politics and crypto over the years that I didn't know before we got the crash course in terms of how to influence things and how things get done in DC is basically the cabinet selections, the administration selections, who you pick to surround yourself with matters most of all, because that's like the entire executive branch. When we talk about the administrative state, that's kind of what we're talking about. And
The president will delegate to their executive leaders. And so it's really 100%. A matter of who they delegate to.
Who they are, right? And it's not just the president who plays a hand in kind of like filling this position. I mean, like quite infamously, Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren, had a huge hand in picking many of the crypto touching positions in Biden's cabinet. So the question is, who's going to lead Treasury in a Harris tenure? Wally Adeyemo is one name. She's got two options, but Wally is one of them. This would be kind of bad news for crypto if he takes the helm. Now, he was someone on that call that we mentioned earlier, but he supported Warren in warning that terrorist groups will increase their use of crypto unless Congress approves new regulatory tools. Remember that? It turned out to be kind of like fake news. They're not looking at the way banks use you know, the banking system to fund terrorist groups, like isolating and targeting crypto. And, you know, Warren was leading that. And then also her economic advisors. This is another set of positions in her administration. So there's rumor from Alex Thorne, he put this out, that some of those would be pretty negative. And there's two names here among potential Kamala Harris economic advisors. One is Brian Deese, and the other is Bharat Ramamurthy. Okay, and these are two anti-crypto officials from the Biden administration that rumor is they will carry over into the Harris administration. So just to get a sense of one of them, we'll talk about Bharat Ramamurthy. Nick Carter says, if Bharat Ramamurthy is part of the Harris administration, it's over, because this was one of the guys, there he is here, one of the architects of Chokepoint 2.0, at least according to Nick Carter.
He is Chokepoint 2.0.
Yeah, he played a key role. He was anti-crypto. Let's see. Fortune described him. This is not a crypto publication. Fortune described him as the White House's top crypto critic. He played a role in the White House's effort to block stablecoin legislation. Remember, that's something we tried to make happen. Yikes. You're blocking that. Let's hear from Caitlin Long on the subject. So just some context. Caitlin Long, longtime crypto bull. Sorry, I didn't need to say that. So some context on Caitlin Long. She's been in the crypto space forever. You might say a long time. Background on Caitlin Long. She's been in crypto forever, and she was trying to get an application for a state chartered, fully reserved bank with the Fed. Okay. And this was denied by none other than Bharat Ramamurthy. She has some context on how he plays the politics game in Washington. Let's hear the clip on Laura Shin's podcast.
We were told by a whistleblower who approached me that weekend after the Custodia denial, who had done it at the White House, a guy named Bharat Ramamurthy. I'd never met Bharat Ramamurthy. How were we on his radar screen? Well, I looked him up. Lo and behold, he ran economic policy for Elizabeth Warren's presidential campaign in 2020. And it is now, there've been a lot written subsequently, it is now acknowledged that he, Gary Gensler, and Marty Gruenberg and Michael Barr were locking arms and going after the banks in Operation Chokepoint 2.0, as well as all the crypto companies through the SEC, and going as aggressively as possible. And I asked...
She goes on. I'll just cut it there, but she goes on. But that's kind of a taste of how he was likely involved in Operation Chokepoint, David.
I mean, that's about as damning as it gets, right?
Yeah.
This it's pretty incompatible to have him on your advisor board and also like have a pro crypto campaign like that. You can't have both of those things, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is Austin Campbell who says it this way. He's a Democrat, by the way. We've had Austin on the podcast before. If the Harris administration is going to continue Operation Chokepoint 2.0, it's impossible to support them from an ethical standpoint. And I say that as a Democrat. Is the take here. Yeah. It might not like this administration that's lining up seems like it could very possibly be more of the same, which would be quite honestly a disaster for crypto policy in the US.
So I put out a tweet this morning, Ryan, which is a screenshot of the plus 10% Kamala Harris polymarket odds. And I say, maybe we should reconsider our lobbying efforts. We have Donald Trump. He is the pro crypto president. And now I'm suggesting let's focus all of our industry's attention and energy on the Harris campaign, because those are the people that are getting out to get us. And there is, anytime I tweet anything like this, which is like, crypto is bipartisan, let's make sure we win both parties, I just get attacked by all of the crypto right who are like, why are you supporting Kamala? Why are you trying to throw your support to Kamala? Which I am not trying to do. I am trying to throw my support behind the reform of Kamala's campaign. And I think it makes the most sense to go after and lobby the party who is attacking you. And I would just like to say that is strategically the correct move to do. Like, we should invest in reforming the Democratic Party because they are the ones going after us.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in broad strokes. And yet there's also kind of the counter, like, I think open door policy is valid, but it gets in the details of how do you reconsider your lobbying efforts? Because, you know, we had David Bailey on the podcast. That episode goes public Monday, but if you're a bankless citizen, you already got it.
Mm-hmm. You already got it.
He makes the case that the way you actually reform the Democrat Party on crypto is you defeat them. You absolutely trounce Harris. You are super loud about it. You say you lost because of crypto and like come around next time, and that they will only listen when they lose and when it hurts them and when it costs. And politics is a zero sum game, and somebody's got to win and somebody has got to lose. And so this is actually how you trigger reform in the Democratic Party. They're not going to come to you until they're licking their wounds and they're beat up and sore.
I think that is very correct. And would be a lot stronger of an argument if Donald Trump was plus 10% rather than minus 10%. But right now, the Kamala campaign is the likely winner, according to $600 million on Polymarket.
Yeah.
And so like if we were just ready to squash the Democratic Party's face into the ground so hard because Donald Trump was the pro-crypto president, if we were 50-50, we would have a much better case for that to be true. But all of a sudden, Kamala is in the lead by 10%, which is not a small amount. And all of a sudden, betting the entire horse on Donald Trump's campaign doesn't seem to be the positive EV move to make.
Well, I see that case too. I think the bottom line, at least for me at this point in time, is there's been no evidence of a Kamala pivot. And if
there's no
Kamala
evidence
Harris
of a Kamala pivot.
Does populate her administration with anti-crypto people like Bharat Ramamurthy, then her administration is going to be anti-crypto, full stop. It's kind of that simple. And that's super disappointing because we want crypto to be bipartisan, but it's not at this point. And so if you're a single issue voter and your one issue is crypto, okay, I'm not advocating for single issue voters out there. I think that, there's pros and cons being a single issue voter. But if you are a crypto single issue voter, Trump is the ticket for you.
It's not even close.
It's not even close at this point.
Yeah.
The question is, does crypto even matter to the Democrats? So some people are saying, it's just it doesn't even matter to the Democrats. Why are you crypto people even talking about this? No one cares. It's not a national election issue. I think there's evidence countering that, and pretty substantial evidence. It's not just Trump's reception in the crypto community and the Bitcoin 2024 conference and roaring crowds, whatever he talks about firing Gary Gensler. Here's a survey that came out of Paradigm last week. As of right now, there are between 1-2% of Democrats who might actually vote Trump because the Biden administration has let Elizabeth Warren run their crypto policy. So there's Democrats out there. This is a recent poll. This is post Kamala Harris being elevated to nominee. 804 self-identified Democrats who said 1-2% of those might switch. And that margin can make a difference in a swing state. This is going to be a close election no matter how you cut it. And there are some wins for Democratic voters here. It's they care about privacy. Right. Mm-hmm. They're 80% of them, David, were worried that if Trump gets elected, that the Trump administration would somehow cut off their family's access to financial services. Right. When my adversaries are in power, it's kind of just some fear. Right. If my adversaries are in power and they have the strings to control the financial system, what might they do if I decide to protest? There's actually huge support for crypto among people of color. So more so even than among Black Democrats, 22% own crypto, 25% of Hispanic Democrats own crypto, whereas 18% of all Democrats own crypto. So there's votes to win here. It's pretty clear. So I don't buy the message that there's no wins for Democrats in pivoting to pro-crypto. They just don't seem to see it.
Okay, so remember when you, right before the ETH ETF got surprise approved, and you gave the case, the Hail Mary case for the Ethereum getting ETF getting approved, and you said it was something 1-5% odds.
Yeah.
I've got one of those.
Okay. You got your Hail Mary?
Yeah, I've got my Hail Mary. So like I've said, the Kamala administration has strategically not released any sort of policy about anything, because the strategy between her and Trump right now is Kamala is the generic Democrat. The Kamala administration campaign plans to release either her whole policy or her economic policy at the Democratic National Convention on August 19th through the 22nd. I think Kamala is speaking on the last day, the 22nd. And so this is when we will hear some of her policy agendas. We will actually hear it for the first time. I do not think she will say anything about crypto. I think it's much more likely that she will say things about tech, because she is the San Francisco tech adjacent prosecutor out of California. She is familiar with Silicon Valley. And if, in my opinion, if I was a political advisor, of which I'm not, just being a normal centrist is going to win the camp, like the presidency for either candidate. Whoever is the normal centrist, in my opinion, wins. And I think Kamala, if she positions herself as a normal centrist that's pro-tech, they can start to get back a lot of the Silicon Valley like power. Like you remember the Mark Andreessen episode that A16Z did about being pro-Trump because the Biden administration was like all hammering their entire industry. If she can win back those votes by being a pro-tech centrist and that it gets announced at the Democratic National Convention, I think that is a bellwether canary for also being pro-crypto. Is being the pro-tech centrist.
So what's your Hail Mary there? Because that feels like that could definitely happen. Like
she is the pro-tech centrist, and then that opens the door. Like tech is also synonymous with crypto in this sense. I don't think any of the Democrats want her to say crypto during this convention, but like tech and crypto are kind of the same thing.
See, that last part, that last part is the part that is just so dumb, and I just can't understand. Is like, why is it the default? Why is it not the default position in the Democrat Party? Among the Democrats to just be like neutral to crypto or like pro crypto. And I just can't wrap my head around that. Like why she, like the center's position is basically that, or at least being neutral to crypto, right? You don't have to go invest in or put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. Anyway, it's hard to see. Let's get Vivek Ramaswamy's take. Cause I actually saw this clip on CNBC and it was great. Let's hear what he has to say about the prospects of a Kamala pivot.
There are those who argue, who think if you're a single voter on crypto, that this could lose her the election if she doesn't come out and embrace it. Look, Trump was all for the not taxing tips. Now she's all for. Do you think she will ultimately embrace crypto as an industry?
I predict her verbiage will. And I do think that part of the reason why is you see Trump's speech at the Bitcoin conference. It's just a matter of competing for votes that she's going to adopt a thoughtful position. Now, speaking as an American, not from a partisan perspective, I think that's a good thing. I think we should want great debate in the marketplace of ideas. Even if she offers a thoughtful digital assets framework or policy, even if I don't agree with all of it, I think that'll be a good thing for the country. But what I challenge Kamala Harris to do is not just cite the pieties in the words. Go into detail. Say what you actually believe about self-custody of assets. Say what you actually believe about whether you think Gary Gensler should continue as leader of the SEC. So I think those specifics are going to matter a lot, Kelly.
For sure, but is what you're saying is just a general position of openness is probably all the industry really is looking for. This idea that it's not a partisan issue, that Republicans are for it and Democrats are against it.
It should not be a partisan issue. Now, what I think you are seeing is this tendency to really embrace whatever wins her the most votes. But when you're looking at your question, Andrew, of how do you assess the seriousness of that? The metric to use is how specific she actually gets on those policy proposals.
100%. 100%. I think if Kamala Harris came out and said, I like crypto. Crypto is fun. everyone in the crypto industry is going to just smell bullshit. Our smell bullshit like senses are like really high. We're really good at that. Like she's going to have to say the words like self-custody and among other things.
I'm firing Gary Gensler would be a great start.
I'm firing Gary Gensler. Yeah. All right, that's enough politics for this week. We'll be back, I'm sure, next week with even more. But further on in this episode, Coinbase rolling out their Bitcoin on Base as BitGo's WBTC takes a tumble. We're going to talk about that. Optimism teasing the delivery of the superchain and all the details around that. Kronos, a layer one, becomes a ZK EVM as a layer two on Ethereum. And maybe tap to pay with USDC coming straight out of your iPhone. USDC in your iPhone. To the point of sale, wherever you are. We're going to talk about all of this and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Mantle, a layer two, which you're about to hear from right now. New projects are coming online to the Mantle layer two every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of layer two design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle layer two to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Launching a token
Don't let complex legal and tax issues slow you down. Toku provides specialized support to optimize your launch and ensure that you as a founder and your team and your investors get the most tax-efficient outcomes. The Toku team understands the crypto space inside and out and will ensure your token launch is fully compliant while maximizing tax efficiency. Toku can connect you with the best attorneys if you need them to make sure that you have the best advice, and Toku can help to optimize your taxes so you pay the least possible amount of taxes while still maintaining legal compliance. With Toku's guidance, you can concentrate on building your company while Toku handles the logistics. Token launches don't have to be complicated. Talk to Toku today to get a free initial token valuation. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be: secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities.
And we're back with some Layer 2 updates brought to you by Mantle, a Layer 2 that we enjoy. Two things I think caught our eye this week. First, Kronos, which was previously a Cosmos chain, has deployed its first ZK Layer 2 EVM using the ZK Sync stack. Kronos, if you're not familiar, is like the crypto.com chain. Binance has BNB, Coinbase has Base, crypto.com has Kronos. And Kronos has now migrated to become a ZK stack ZK Sync chain and has just launched their alpha mainnet. Pretty cool, especially if you're a believer in the Ethereum roll-up centric roadmap thesis. Just one more exchange chain coming into the fold. Pretty cool.
Do you remember when crypto.com like hired Matt Damon to talk about crypto.com?
Right. Yeah.
I remember like I was watching a movie. I forget what movie this was with like just like my family, and then up pops Matt Damon and he's shilling like crypto.com. I want Matt Damon to start shilling ZK EVMs with layer twos.
The ZK stack, Kronos.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right. So that was one update. The second is something called Nebra launched on mainnet. And I think this is interesting. It sounds super geeky, but it's actually kind of cool.
It is also super geeky, but very bullish.
Yeah, this is a proof aggregator. Okay, so a ZK proof.
I love proof aggregators.
So if you're a ZK EVM, like the Kronos chain via ZK Sync, you have to pay Ethereum layer one some fees for ZK settlement proofs, basically. And there's a cost associated with this. So ZK EVMs, it's not low. They've paid, ZK EVMs have paid to layer ones $60 million, David. Through the course of this. And so what Nebra does is it basically aggregates all of these proofs together and makes them cheaper. It's like kind of like a batch purchasing, batch processing, batch compression makes it cheaper. So Nebra
wholesale block space for Ethereum proofs.
Yeah, just selling it wholesale. And they claim that they can make these proofs 90% cheaper. All of that's kind of cool, because what that means is ZK layer twos, the transaction fees will continue to drop. And I think there's kind of a story here around Ether the asset with respect to layer two transaction fees. David, not to spoil things too far in advance, but you and I had Kyle Samani on the podcast earlier this week.
We did what?
Yes. And we had him. We were just like, kind of, Kyle, tell us all the ways we went wrong. And he was very happy to do that, particularly with respect to Ethereum, because he thinks that layer twos, ZK EVMs, some of which we just mentioned, will be parasitic to the price of Ether. And so
this is a bad business model for the layer one.
Basically, he sees these things, the cost of settling to layer one to Ethereum is dropping to zero through innovation like Nebra. And he's not wrong about that. I think there's a counter that Ether is earning more credible neutrality, earning its moat for a place for layer twos to kind of settle and provide data availability, and will be a money inside of these ecosystems. And that's a bigger value proposition. He was having none of it, of course. So anyway, that episode is coming at you soon, but it's all associated. These types of innovations all factor into whether you're long ETH or long some other ecosystem, and you know, layer twos and the roadmap and how they're going, it's all kind of tied together.
Yeah, well, part of his big claim was that like the marginal cost of software approaches zero, And this is actually like Nebra. This, what Nebra is bringing to the table, is exactly in line with that. We're just like, oh, do you have as a ZK layer two or other like proofs that you need to use Ethereum for? And they're expensive. Well, like, we can aggregate them and we can get those 90% closer to zero than previously. And so if you want that podcast episode, it's probably in your podcast player right now, or it's early access will be.
Soon we're going to put early access out soon, right?
It's early access. I think will come out like Tuesday of next week, and then the actual episode will drop like a week or two later.
So how do people get that?
There's a link in the show notes to sign up to become a Bankless Citizen. Or if you already are a Bankless Citizen, I hope you have the premium feed. If you don't, there is a perks page on your once you are logged into Bankless.com, you can go get it.
David, tell me about Wrapped Bitcoin and the drama that's going on.
Okay, so BitGo, once upon a time, like 2018, 2019, launched Wrapped Bitcoin, WBTC. BitGo is a custodian provider, and among a consortium of other signers, created this product, Wrapped Bitcoin, so it could come onto Ethereum. I think my memory is hazy on this, but just like overall, this has turned into just like kind of just like a business model that hasn't generated too much cash and is overall has kind of turned into a burden on BitGo. That's, I think, the rumor on the rumor mill. I'm fuzzy on the details, but overall, they announced plans to transfer control over WBTC to a joint venture made up of itself, a Hong Kong-based investment manager, Bit Global, and the Tron ecosystem with Justin Sun.
Hello.
Yeah, it says it plans to diversify its custodial locations and jurisdictions for the underlying Bitcoin to include Hong Kong and Singapore. DeFi, the number one consumer of Wrapped Bitcoin, which is going to be MakerDAO and Aave, DeFi was not happy about it because of the lack of clarity on who these new signers are, perhaps especially with Justin Sun's involvement. Even though Justin Sun says, like, I'm not going to be the signer, like, your ecosystem's not going to be the signer, but somehow Justin Sun is involved here, and no one trusts Justin Sun.
Okay, so and just to clarify the use case for, like, Wrapped Bitcoin, it's a tokenized version of Bitcoin on Ethereum, right? Yep. So you can sort of hold Bitcoin,
It's an IOU for Bitcoin.
And then you could use it in Aave, you could use it in Maker, that kind of thing, but it's all custodied by a third party, so it's definitely not like trustless, bankless, decentralized.
That's right. And like the two dominant like use cases of WBTC are using Bitcoin as collateral in Aave and MakerDAO, and make both of these organizations like a pretty decent amount in fees. Like, I don't know like what else people are using like Wrapped Bitcoin for. It's mainly just be a collateral asset in DeFi. As a result, MakerDAO has a forum post to suggest to offboard WBTC, which would mean freezing any inbound Wrapped Bitcoin vaults and sunsetting that as a project. So any current Wrapped Bitcoin vault would be untouched. So if you're using Wrapped Bitcoin, you'd be fine. But like no new Wrapped Bitcoin vaults. And Aave's governance forums, I think, kind of said something similar, just because of the lack of transparency and clarity there is around who is signing this, like who is these new signers on the Wrapped Bitcoin. Some added risk, exactly. And like these organizations are very sensitive to risk. So that's the drama. The BitGo like founder CEO or some representative like went into like the MakerDAO governance forums and was like, you guys are like blowing this all too much.
Panic.
It's not that bad. Don't panic, blah, blah, blah. But nonetheless, Coinbase just tweets out CBBTC, implying that like, okay, Coinbase is going to step in into this market and provide like an alternative version for this backed by Coinbase, which is an interesting move. I think it makes sense. I'm kind of skeptical as to how much demand there is for Wrapped Bitcoin, generally speaking. I mean, we've seen how much demand there is for Wrapped Bitcoin, and it's like kind of hit its limit 2 years ago. It's been just for like I said, Bitcoin collateral and Aave and Maker. But nonetheless, Jesse Pollock is pretty excited. He says, to say it out loud, I love Bitcoin and I'm so grateful for its role in kickstarting crypto. And we're going to build a massive Bitcoin economy on Base. And so it kind of makes sense. Like Coinbase has all of this Bitcoin. They have a chain that they want to encourage DeFi to grow on. So why they maybe just they're going to put their Bitcoin on their chain. You're already trusting Coinbase. You're trusting them a little bit less with Base, and you're trusting them just as much with your Bitcoins. So maybe just have your Bitcoins on Base and like get some yield. The business model makes sense.
This is another release that's related to, not quite a release, but kind of an announcement of the future. So Base, of course,
yeah.
Base, of course, runs on the Optimism stack, right? And Optimism has its own layer two. Many of the layer twos and kind of like the top layer twos are optimistic rollups and Optimism framework layer twos. The question is, can we smush all these things together? There's like a fragmentation problem across all of these layer twos. And Optimism has long talked about the superchain. And the holy grail there is, can you at least have some level of composability between all of these chains? So if you go to Base and you have assets on the Optimism mainnet, it all feels like one. It's one user experience. So they actually rolled out a plan to do this. What's the plan, David?
It's been in the works for a long time. And this is what we call the superchain. And the plan, currently in DevNet, soon to be in TestNet and therefore MainNet, is to meld all these things together. How the details, the technical details, I don't think are totally released yet. I think if you probably went searching on Optimism forums and docs, you probably get a pretty clean sense. But it's some amount of like some common sequencer between all of these 29 OP stack chains, including Base, Zora, Mode, Network. And they have 36% of all Ethereum layer two activity. So 30% of all layer twos are about to become perceived to be the same chain by the users. That's very, very cool. I would like to see what kind of like emergent properties come out of this when you do meld 36 chains together into one. This doesn't perfectly solve Ethereum's composability problems because you still have like the Arbitrum ecosystem, and the Arbitrum ecosystem is going to do the same strategy, except it's going to be over there. And then ZK Sync is actually already like this, and they already have their like big chains that they have spun up. But like it does take like what is like 80 or 90 chains and consolidate it down to like five ecosystems.
Yeah,
and Optimism is just the first to do this.
They did also, once they do that, once they unite their own kind of chains across the superchain, the question is how do you connect one superchain to, you know, ZK Sync's right. version of a superchain, let's say. And for that, they're looking to ERC-7683. That is an interoperability standard between superchains and the rest of Ethereum layer twos. I feel like I need a deep dive into that ERC and see how much of this it really supports and how composable these assets need will be in this type of a right. world. But I'm pretty certain this is part of Vitalik's tweet when he's like, hey, we don't need full shared sequencing, like based rollups.
We don't need perfect synchronous composability.
Yes, all we need is the adoption of a set of ERCs. And I think this was maybe one of the ERC standards that he mentioned.
For sure. Yeah, can't wait till that come out. Like, so the superchain is like one of my most anticipated upgrades to the Optimism ecosystem. Ryan, I know you have been just totally waiting in anticipation for Eric Trump's DeFi project.
Yes.
Are you ready for what it is?
Yes.
Tell me. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Hold your breath. Okay. Digital real estate. That's all the details that we have. That's kind of all we got.
Okay.
And so in an interview with New York Post, about
famous
this project.
Crypto publication.
Famous crypto publication. He said, quote the line, it has something to do with digital real estate. And that's all we've got.
To know. I'm now, in. Like, where can
now,
I buy?
Now, Ryan and I, before we were going through and doing this recording, I was like, digital real estate, does he mean tokenized real estate?
Yeah.
Because there is an allusion to having access to like borrowing and lending services for people who own real estate.
You're talking about tokenized real world real estate, like
real estate tokenized on the blockchain.
Sure, sure.
Is one interpretation of what this is.
It
or
is. That's digital.
Or it's digital real estate, as in like
metaverse
Trump NFT cards that aren't actually real. It's fake real estate that's digitized
that's
tokens.
Yeah,
it's real fake real estate.
Buy your Trump Tower in the metaverse. It could be that too. And we just don't know. Or maybe
we just
don't
know.
Maybe it's both. Wouldn't that be perfect?
Huh? I don't even know how that would work. Anyways, there was like this allusion to like providing equitable access to capital and then some combination of digital real estate. We don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, some interesting quotes from this article. We'll have to wait to hear more and to start getting our hands on that digital real estate. David, are stablecoins coming to tap to pay on iPhones? This was the rumor this week.
I think it's a little bit early to say that they are, but this rumor got sparked when Jeremy Allaire, a guy who would know a thing or two, says tap to pay using USDC on iPhones incoming soon. Wallet devs, start your engines. And he is tweeting out an article from Bloomberg about how Apple has opened up the use of its NFC chips and its secure element to third-party app developers, which I didn't even know was closed. If you have ever used Tap to Pay on your iPhone, which I use as often as I possibly can, I love it. It's great. If I forget my wallet, it doesn't matter because it's on my phone. Just like scan my face, tap it on the point of sale, and I've got my thingy. Apple is opening up that service along with its secure element to third-party application developers, which means the secure element, which can securely hold a private key pretty damn well, can hold a private key, which is for a wallet, which could be, in theory, embedded in Tap to Pay, which could be a smart contract wallet that has USDC in it, which is what Jeremy Allaire is alluding to, which I think is super sick.
So
where you
cool.
have a private key on your phone, natively on your iPhone, which scans your face if you use Face ID, and then it's the USDC that you have on your iPhone can pay for stuff.
It's
that
like
is
cash.
Sick. That
it's
is
like
sick.
Cash. It's a bare
it's cash
instrument.
Tokens on your phone.
Yeah, it's yeah. almost like a bare instrument, like cash in your actual wallet. And what's also cool is this leads me to believe. I mean, Jeremy's talking about USDC, and that's certainly one use case. But if the vendor accepts Ether, if the vendor accepts. Right. Like be, dog with hat,
dog with hat, like whatever
dog
on
hat.
Any
that's
blockchain. It could be any blockchain.
Yeah, and you know, like that's really cool to have the user experience of a like Apple iPhone. Because I mean, just like younger generations do not want credit cards. I mean, just they want to pay with their phone, and to have crypto be that accessible, I think is the future. So awesome stuff.
This applies to just like tokens and payments as anyone would expect, but just like you can also apply it to any like a ticket. Like I also like go to concerts and I board airplanes with tickets that are in my Apple wallet.
Yep.
And whenever the hell we figure out how to like do like NFT tickets, which has been talked about since the inception of blockchains, as soon as we disrupt Ticketmaster, you can have that as a bare asset on your phone, which is like the future, which I think is pretty sick.
That's very cool. All right, let's wrap this up. Meme of the week, what are we looking at?
I think this is a new meme format that is just coming out now. I don't know where this came from.
It's going to be hard to describe.
You have to see it. Yeah. I'll do my best to explain it. I don't know what the origins of this meme format is, so I'm just going to make it up what I think it is. And so I'm thinking that I am seeing a rom-com movie of a couple who's like falling in love for the first time. And I'm guessing this is a montage and they are on like, what do you call these things?
Carousel.
Like carousel. Yeah. Carousel with the horses, and they're having a good time and they're being cute. And the guy is labeled me. And the girl is labeled the S&P 500 and they're having a fantastic time. And then in front of them is like the horse carousel ride that they are not on. It's in the foreground. It just happens to be there. Yeah. I'm assuming this is just like a cut frame and this horse.
It's just crypto.
I don't know how to explain it, dude.
I don't think we can. It's just, it made me
and this
laugh.
Horse is in the foreground and it just looks so
whatever.
Dumb.
Meme of the week. That's how I feel.
And it's labeled crypto. Sometimes. Importantly, it's labeled crypto.
Thank you. Well, you got that out. Wow.
Oh my
that's
God,
the meme of the week,
wow.
guys. Let's actually wrap this up. Okay. Let's switch to something more serious, shall we? It's going to be hard after the crazy ass horse. Here. We just saw that. Okay, instead of a moment of zen, we have a moment of responsibility for you, or like a
moment of burden is how I've called it.
Don't want to burden your conscience, you know, too much, but it is a fact that crypto now has a growing list of like political prisoners, actually. Mm-hmm. And I think the latest couple have been most egregious. One of them, which was in the agenda, we'll go through this full story some other time. David, no more crazy horse, dude. Tigran, jailed in Nigeria, no trial. He's a Binance executive, no evidence of wrongdoing, literally being kept in conditions that might render him permanently handicapped. Okay. These are the reports coming out of this. If you haven't followed that story, there'll be a link in the show notes. Another one though, Alexei Pertsev, he was a Tornado Cash developer, open source privacy technology. We've talked about this many times. He was sentenced to jail in the Netherlands, like 5.5 years, something like this. So he's now serving time in jail. We're about to play you a clip from jail where he is asking for funds to help him appeal this case and get out of jail. Of course, it's David Maya's position that he was unrightfully jailed, that this is a failure of Western liberal democracies to actually put him in that place. There's someone else who's associated with Alexei Pertsev. His name's Roman Storm. He's actually has an upcoming trial in the U.S. that will happen in the later part of this year. All eyes on that. It's an incredibly important trial for U.S. precedent. Anyway, some of these folks need our help, and they're raising legal defense funds to help them actually fight this in appeal. So Roman Storm has raised some funds before. He'll probably need more at some point in the future. Alexei Pertsev right now is raising funds to help him appeal this. So we've supported this at Bankless. We're sending him some funds. We'll include a link in the show notes where you can join that effort as well. Super important stuff. So that's what we will play in the moment of Zen for you in a second. David, you want to say anything before I get to risks?
Nope. Moment of anti-Zen. Sorry
yeah.
about it.
Yeah, anti-Zen. Not Zen. I misspoke there. All right, guys. Crypto is risky. You know, you could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.
Hi, my name is Alex Pertsev. 5 years ago, I helped to invent a privacy solution for Ethereum blockchain called Tornado Cash. In August 2022, I was arrested in Amsterdam and put in jail for 8.5 months under suspicion of money laundering. In May of this year, the Dutch court sentenced me to 5 years and 4 months jail. The judges ruled that Tornado Cash disguises and conceals the origin of criminal proceeds, and I am, as a developer, responsible for that. Even though it's somebody else who is misusing the tool, even though I could do nothing to prevent it, it's still me who has to give up 5 years of my life. I disagree with this decision, and I will fight it in appeal. As a result of the court's verdict, I was put in jail again. That being stressful for me and for my family on its own, it limits me to contribute to my legal defense. While at the same time we are working against the whole Department of Financial Police in the Netherlands. There is no precedent for this case, and its outcome is crucial for blockchain industry. Even more broadly, it raises a question when the developers can be held responsible for their invention if misused by third parties. Where is that line that you cannot cross? I have extended my legal team, and we are eager to disprove the verdict and provide clarity to this issue. It will be of huge importance for the future of our industry. Dear listeners, I need your help. Please contribute to my legal defense. You can do so by donating through Juicebox and JusticeDAO. I'm profoundly grateful for any contribution, small or large. Thank you.